from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, another win for Trump at the Supreme Court. Liberal Christians seek to take out conservatives, and big business picks sides. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. On Monday of this week, a group of congressmen headed south to check on the state of our nation's border. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins from the southern border is Congressman Ted Yoho of Florida. Here's Tony Perkins.
Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thank you for having me on, and I appreciate the work you do.
Well, thank you. It was good to see you last week on Capitol Hill at the Republican Study Committee. And always appreciate having you on the program because you keep up with what's going on. I know you're down there seeing what's happening on the border for yourself. Give us the latest.
Yeah, we're here firsthand. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we toured the detention centers and we saw some of the migrants come that were there, some of them being processed. And I can't give a large enough shout out for our Custom Border Patrol people, the people that are down here. They have what's best for the people that are coming into this country. And just a remarkable job, great facilities. And that garbage you heard out of the people that came down here, how bad it was and, you know, drinking out of toilets, that is just completely, it's a lie. It's an untruth. And the people that said those, you know, are just not straight with the American people.
Now, are you there on your own? Or are you with other members of Congress that are touring the facilities?
We have 9 members of Congress here.
So I would have to imagine that the president surely is excited that the Supreme Court has given the go-ahead for the defense funds to be used for building the wall down there. What's the morale like? What's the morale like down there of those that are actually protecting the border?
Well, the morale with the money coming out of the Supreme Court, which is a good thing and a bad thing. The good thing is they say what they need down here is they need security. Wherever there is a wall, there's less people coming in. There's still people coming in, but there's less, takes them longer. And so they can do a better job, the Customs Border Patrol can. The bad thing about having to use DOD money is Congress should get their act together and secure the border. You know, we shouldn't have to be taking money out of there. It should be a common sense thing that says secure the border. And I've talked to Democrats on different trips that we've been on. They all agree that we need to have a secure border, but they can't go publicly because, they can't be seen as walling off an area.
You made reference to what some of your colleagues on the other side of the aisle said after going down to the border, that you had people drinking out of toilets, you had children sitting in their own feces. You had all of these horrible things. If we had the border wall, which would be a deterrent for people trying to come into this country because it would be harder, fewer would come because of the obstacles that are in the way, would that not lessen the potential humanitarian crisis that we're seeing at the border?
Absolutely. It would lessen it so much, Tony. And you had asked about the morale of the people down here. The morale is good, but when they get vilified in the news and by members of Congress, it wears on them. They are doing an excellent job. But to go back to your last question, the more we can do to slow down the influx of people, the better it is on our facilities, the better it is on the strain on our Border Patrol agents. You know, what's interesting is the policy that President Trump had of saying that we are going to close trade with Mexico if they don't help us. When he said that, the numbers dropped down. And then when the Mexicans started to do it, the Mexican government, it dropped down. When he did some of his other policies, zero tolerance, numbers dropped down. And so deterrence work, it's just following through and then having the common sense reforms of border security. We are going to enforce the laws on the book, and we need to change a couple laws so that we can do a better job faster.
Ted, I know you've been down there many times, so you've been down there firsthand. You've seen this. You made reference to this, but the president, you know, driving that hard trade bargain with Mexico and basically getting them to agree to putting troops on the border. Have you seen a distinct difference between now and when you were there before the Mexico before the Mexican authorities started guarding the border?
Tony, that's what we're seeing, and that's what we've been told, is when the people showed up from the Mexican government, and then, of course, keep in mind, they put a bigger force on their southern border, it just changed it tremendously. I mean, it slowed it down. And the word's gotten out that, you know, these people are serious about border security and immigrating properly. We've got ways for people to come into this country properly. You know who's making the money on this is the drug cartels. Nobody crosses this border unless they pay the drug cartel. And the average fee is between $3,500 and $10,000. And so the longer this goes on, the more there is the humanitarian crisis. People are being trafficked. I mean, we just hear ungodly numbers that would anybody in their right mind would say, secure the border and enforce the laws on the book.
I want to ask you to address something, Congressman Yoho, that oftentimes gets lost in the discussion. I know a lot of our listeners probably heard this, but you know, there's this perception by many that we're talking about the southern border with Mexico, and these are people from Mexico coming over. They're just coming through Mexico. There's a lot of folks coming from different parts of the world that have other purposes and intentions than just economic opportunity that are crossing our border.
Oh, you're so right. There's over 57 countries that they've identified, from China to Africa, all over Central and South America, the Indonesia area, the South Asia Pacific area. So there's people all over the world coming through. And the reason they're coming is because they know that it's an easy place to get through, that America doesn't have their act together. You know, again, if we exercise the rules already on the books, we don't need a lot of new rules and laws, but if we just enforce those and have some semblance of border security and agreements with other countries like Mexico, Guatemala, the arrangement that President Trump has done with them, and then have tough policies that we will close this border if you do not come to the table and help secure this, because all this influx is weakening America. And a weakened America is not good for the Western Hemisphere, and to be honest, it's not good for the world.
So, when the president takes these hard positions, which people, you know, say, oh, you can't be diplomatic and take that, but it's bringing results.
It is bringing results, and, you know, people can sit there and complain about his message and how he does stuff on Twitter, but I would encourage him to look at the results. If he's getting the results you want, which he is in this case, let's applaud those results and, you know, give him the support that he needs. And again, we shouldn't have to be taking money from DOD to do that, what Congress should be doing.
Right.
But I'm glad he went route, and the Supreme Court ruled the correct way.
Congressman Yoho, before we run out of time here, you know, last time we were discussing Venezuela, that's not been so much in the news as of late, although the situation there really has not changed. It's still a desperate situation. What's the latest?
The latest is there are 66 countries now recognizing President Juan Guaido as the interim president of Venezuela. I just got back from a trip from Argentina and Chile. The president of Chile, Panera, he was the first one in Latin America to come out to support Guaido. And so there's more pressure coming from the Latin American countries and from the EU to recognize Juan Guaido. Keep in mind, Tony, the people that are working against this are the people that are working against Western democracies. It's Russia, Cuba, China, and Iran, along with Maduro. And so these are all people that are not working for a stable world. They're working to destabilize the world. And, you know, it was good to hear people coming to Guaido's, and the idea is that there's going to be more support behind him, and eventually that regime will turn if China and Russia and Cuba stay out of it.
So is it my sense that it appears that our policy now is to kind of step back and let kind of this natural progression take place, let other countries come along, and just the weight of their bad decisions bring about the implosion?
Well, that and, you know, the diplomatic pressure we put on, like, the Lima Group, which is an organization of, I think, 12 Latin American countries that have come together, the Organization for American States, the pressure that we talk to European unions and saying, this guy has bad human rights abuses. You know, they've got a 10,000,000% inflation rate. He's driving people out of his country, and it's not for the betterment of the Venezuelan people. So all these are coming together, putting more weight on that pressure. And I think you'll see him cave, and the sooner the better.
Certainly,
because if we don't do this, Tony, we're going to have a serious situation in the Western Hemisphere. And we know how bad that's turned for the Middle East, and we don't want that in our hemisphere.
Right. We're talking about the largest man-made humanitarian crisis in history, potentially in the making. Congressman Ted Yoho, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for taking time out there on the border to join us.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you for your time and what you do. God bless.
You can find out more about Congressman Yoho, as well as download FRC's Stand Firm app when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'll be back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Then come join us at FRC Action's Values Voter Summit in D.C. From October 11th to the 13th, hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Oliver North, Dana Lash, and congressional leaders. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. You may not have heard about the latest group to go after conservative Christians like you and I, but they're actually liberal Christians, and they're comparing us to Nazis. Joining Tony to talk about these derogatory accusations is David Barton, the president of Wall Builders.
David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, good to be with you, Tony.
Well, let's start with that. What's a Christian nationalist?
Well, it actually is whatever they want it to be at the point in time which they're talking about it. They do a great job of redefining terms, redefining words. They make it sound like it's something really scary. And yet they fail to note that it's the U.S. Supreme Court that three times has used that language in a positive way. And there have been more than 300 state and federal courts talking about America as a Christian nation. But it was always in a wholesome way. It was always in a very non-coercive way, very voluntary way. And so now these guys take it and make a militant definition out of it, applying the term nationalism. And the other place where you hear them use the term nationalists is with Nazis. And right. So now they're taking nationalism, they've applied the Nazi term to Christians, actually to Americans, and thrown the term Christian in on top of that to make people really scared. And, you know, again, this is a definition they've come up with. I don't know of anyone who is a Christian nationalist the way they define it, but then they try to impute that behavior, that belief, to people who have never believed that. So the first thing always is, would you define that for me? Then once
right,
you get
exactly.
a definition, you go, where did that definition come from? Because it's never existed historically. That's one you just made up. And so that's the biggest problem is they use words to say things that they really weren't intended to say.
Well, the first thing that jumped out at me from Goldberg, who apparently wrote the book on Christian nationalism, at least the current definition, is that Christian nationalists believe in a revisionist history. You know, the left is always good at projecting. That's what they've
been
doing.
Yeah, that's right.
They've been revising history.
Well, they revise it when they impute that kind of definition of Christian nationalism, because that's a definition that's never existed except in their mind. And, you know, Christian nationalism is the belief that America somehow had this Christian foundation and Christian nations, and that the founding fathers were somehow Christian. And, you know, not every founding father is a Christian, but my gosh, the majority of them were. And for them not to be Christian, you're going to have to explain to me why that by 1815, you had more than 1,400 government-issued prayer proclamations, often openly referring to Jesus Christ and Christian rhetoric. So if you're saying that's revisionist, I'm kind of curious as to who the revisionist is. You guys yeah. ignore the actual history, or we that actually present it.
That's not history that's made up. That's history that's documented. Those documents exist.
Right.
They're out there. You can read them for yourselves. What you've been doing for the last 25 years is basically uncovering those and bringing those back to the forefront of discussion so that we can truly know what our history is.
You know, one of the things that we have done and that we are meticulous about is providing footnotes to actual original source documentation. Not that some professor said, not that some writer said, here it is from the Supreme Court, here it is from Congress, here it is from whatever. And I think one of the greatest compliments we ever had was out of your home state, Tony, of Louisiana. We had the head of the ACLU come after us and said, you guys have overstated this stuff about Christianity and the nation, the founding fathers. I'm going to embarrass you. I'm going to prove you're wrong. I'm going to do an expose on you. And the head of the ACLU, who's at that time an atheist, came back several months later and said, you know what? It turns out you guys have really understated the evidence that's out there. As a result, he did become a Christian. He became a Court of Appeals judge there in Louisiana, quite on the opposite side, because he actually took the time to go look at the original sources and not what his friends had told him about that from a secular perspective. And so that's one of the greatest compliments we've ever had, is someone trying to prove us wrong and went to the actual sources and actually said there's more back there than what you guys say there is.
Well, and that's an example of what's happening in the broader area of the teaching of history in our schools today, that the facts are not out there. This true history is not taught, and there is a revisionist, but it's not coming from Christians.
No, it's not. And actually, a recent study that came out from the American College of Trustees and Alumni said that right now, if you want to have a history degree, and if you go to the top 76 universities in America to get a history degree, at 64 of those 76 universities, you will not get a single course in American history for a history degree. So it's American history is not being taught. We're offering degrees. As a matter of fact, we've seen that 23 state universities in California no longer even offer a history degree. You can't even study it if you want to. University of Wisconsin has dropped history as a core, as a degree field. You can't even study it. So it's not we who are revising it. The other guys are revising it, and when they can't revise it, they just eliminate it. They just take it out.
David, thanks so much for joining us. As always, appreciate the great work that you and Wall Builders do. You guys are a blessing to the nation.
We love you guys at FRC. Thanks for all you do, brother.
You can find out more about David Barton and Wall Builders, as well as ways that you can engage with Family Research Council when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, look for ways that you can join us for this year's Values Voter Summit coming up in October. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Family Research Council is dedicated to advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture. That's why we offer a dynamic internship program to invest in the next generation of leaders. The Family Research Council internship is a 12 to 15 week program designed to educate and inspire university students on impacting government and culture from a biblical worldview. This paid internship offers free housing in the heart of DC. For more info and to apply, visit frc.org/internships.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. In recent months, we've talked many times about how social media is trying to shape the political landscape, but they aren't the only ones. Big business is getting more and more involved, even at the expense of offending customers. Joining Tony to talk about this growing trend is Bill Simon, former president and CEO of Walmart.
Bill, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, how are you?
I'm doing quite well. How about you?
Terrific. Thanks for asking.
Well, let's jump into this. Now, the Justice Department did not identify any particular companies that they were looking at, but everyone's eye immediately went to Google, Amazon, Facebook, Apple. Is there something here that could possibly lead to the federal government taking potential actions for antitrust violations?
Well, I think in a few instances, a case could be made. I don't think big is inherently bad by definition, but some of the practices that have been going on in some of the companies for a while have concerned me, and I've spoken about them before. particularly Amazon. And I think it's really interesting to look at, and you look at it sort of, you know, at the 30,000-foot level. But investors particularly have been really exuberant about Amazon driving their share price up, despite the fact that they don't make a lot of money, or hadn't made a lot of money until recently. 2007, I think, is when Amazon Prime started. It was at $79. And it put a lot of pressure on several retailers, and then Circuit City went out of business, and Linens and Things went out of business in about 2011. And suddenly in 2014-15, Amazon raised the price of Prime to $99. And then you fast forward, Toys R Us goes out of business, and now it's $119. And that is, that could be construed as anti-competitive behavior, you know, driving people out of business and raising your price.
Well, that there would be, would fit the classic definition of what monopolies do. But generally speaking, the federal government has been slow to look at, as you said, big is not necessarily bad, as long as the consumers are benefiting and they've pretty much left their hands off. But there's a new twist to this that I don't think we saw in previous years, like with AT&T, Standard Oil, when you saw these big monopolies broken up by the government, is that there is an ideological aspect here where many of these big companies have liberal social policies that are weighing into shaping public policies, or else they're in some of these big platforms where social media takes place, where they're seem to be censoring conservative thought and interaction. So there's like a new angle that's being considered in this, or might lead to greater government action.
Well, I mean, it's certainly concerning if you think about it. You know, 100 years ago, the public square was literally the public square, and you know, that was really hard to have any ideological bent to. It transitioned to, you know, 75 or 50 years ago, the public square became the press, and there's always been a little bit of a bias in the press, but now that the public square is you know, Twitter and the social media giants and its control, it can be regulated by them in a way to filter out opinions that they're not in line with, and that appears to be the case. Now, I think, you know, I don't know that there's any legislation, and I don't think when the laws were written, this sort of thing was contemplated, that the public square could be owned by somebody, and then whether their rights as an independent business, as opposed to the rights of free speech in America, and how those two things conflict. It sounds to me like it's going to end up in the Supreme Court.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Bill Simon, my guest, former CEO of Walmart USA. Walmart has gone through quite a change, but business is no longer just in the business of selling widgets. We've seen more and more just in the last decade where big business is now stepping into social policy.
Yeah, and I do really think, Tony, this has just been in the last few years. You know, in the early to middle part of my business career, it was, look, we're a business. We'll sell to anybody. We try to stay out of the public, you know, eye on issues that can be confrontational. You know, our view was always, let's just run a business. And I think increasingly now, just like the rest of our world, people seem to be taking sides and moving in different directions. And that polarization has really become apparent in businesses. And businesses are taking positions on things that I honestly wouldn't think they would have any business taking a position on, because it invariably will alienate one large customer base in one direction or the other, and boards of directors are sort of supporting it at this point. And I think there's going to have to be some kind of reckoning, because a business is particularly one that trades in public markets on the stock exchange has to be available to everybody, and can't exclude one political ideology just because that happens to be who the people. The ideology of the people who are currently running that business.
So, how do you see this playing out? I mean, it's increasingly becoming even, I think, sharper in its contrast. I mean, you've got You've got lending institutions refusing to lend money to organizations that have a certain ideology. You've got, you know, Hollywood saying, like Netflix saying that they're going to boycott Georgia if they move forward with pro-life legislation. I mean, as you say, these are people that should be in the business to provide a service or a product that all people would want. But it's not happening that way. I mean, there is clearly a drawing of a line and people choosing sides in the business world.
Yeah, there is, and I think it's a subset of the larger problem we're having as a society today, where we see this increasing polarization in virtually everything that we do. The good news from the business perspective is so far, you know, very few of these boycotts have panned out or worked. I think the consumer is still, you know, rational and making decisions about what they want to buy based on the quality of a product and not the ideology of a particular company, though you do see it some.
Well, Bill Simon, I got one final question for you, and this may make other CEOs cringe, but speak to the consumers for a moment, our listeners who, by and large, on the 300 stations or so across this nation that listen are Christians, conservatives, care about the climate, moral climate in which we live, but they see increasingly these business taking positions that are hostile to their values and what they're trying to instill in their families and their children. How can they best communicate their concern?
I think the very, very best way you can communicate your concern is with your wallet. I mean, ultimately, that's what companies do. They're in business to make money and to reward their shareholders and to pay their employees. And when the company does something that you don't agree with, or their product represents something that you don't agree with, the simple answer is to not buy it or not participate. And that's honestly the loudest voice that a customer can deliver to a company is, I choose not to buy your product. A 3% change in the sales of a company, or a 5% change in the sales company, will make a huge statement. It doesn't take a lot of people to stop buying a product or to stop going to a retailer or a restaurant or whatever it is for them to notice, because a couple of percentage points is win or lose for a company.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.